with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a toasty 64 degrees here in the fabulous Foreign Studios in almost level West by God, Virginia. On our way down to God only knows what tonight. It's going to be colder than a well digger's. Yeah, one of those. Probably even colder where many of you are. I was just talking with Ben Birch a few minutes ago, and he informed me that they are presently working down to something like minus 22 there in the greater Chicagoland area, so I won't complain too awfully much. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find entree into the chat room. And I certainly encourage you to avail yourself of that. It's a rollicking good time, the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room is. Jump on in. It's free and it's easy. You'll also find the streaming link. Just listen live, bang, there you are, and the stream is playing. But, during Dr. Bill's program, and yes, I am a little bit of a simpleton where the technology is concerned, it was delightful to hear from Dr. John, who was listening to Dr. Bill as he drove down the road. And dang, that's kind of beautiful. We're getting ubiquitous. Well, I don't think we're quite all the way to ubiquity yet, but we're definitely on the on-ramp to that road or something similar. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the PayPal button and the traditional mail address, which I will now repeat for you should you be inclined to use that. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower, just like the president, Drive, PMB. PMB stands for Personal Mailbox, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Please remember, checks, money orders, things like that. Don't make them payable to Bob Kincaid, as they do not come to Bob Kincaid. They go for bill paying. And the best payee is Head On Communications or The Horn or something like that. Because that way, when Boss Man Wayne reaches his hand into the mailbox, he's not bitten by spiders, one. Two, he can then just deposit them and we can go about the business of paying bills. We're on the downhill side of January. We're on our way. It's the 27th of January, 2014. And we're hoping to round out the month of January to the good, which means we need to raise $150 this evening. As we try to every broadcast evening, $150, 10 at 15, 15 at 10, 2 at 75, 6 at 25, 3 at 50, you know how it goes. But any way that you want to jump in and help is always, always welcome. And it is the only way that we stay on the air here. That is that simple. I don't have a night job saying, welcome to Walmart. Nope, don't have one of those. This is what keeps us going. So please bear that in mind as we go through the course of the evening. And it's the same any given day. Now, of course, I know what this is, and you know what this is. It's the beginning of the week. Yes, indeed. It is, in fact, Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears.
We have right-wing freaks for you of all varieties. The mean ones, the hateful ones, the gun-toting ones, the woman-hating ones, the just plain crazy ones, and the religious ones, the political ones, and every stripe of right-wing moron in between. It's Moron Monday on the Horn. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. Yes, for just less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can peep behind this thin cybernetic veil of circus tent canvas to behold the weird, the exotic, the strange. Did I mention right-wingers? Yes, indeed. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. Oh, you know it, you know it, you know it. Stand by, please. Now, I just had to answer a question there. Where are we? Oh, yes, morons. Now, you know that, Wendy Davis down in Texas had a bit of a tough week a couple of weeks ago. Apparently, there is a great big damn difference in whether one got divorced at 19 or divorced at 21. And, well, the for-profit media at least thought there was. And so they blew that molehill up into a mountain. But anyway, she had a tough time. I saw this on our buddy Liberal in South Carolina's Facebook page. Enter a guy from, because, well, you know, those South Carolina repiglickens are kind of a pushy lot. They feel like their input is needed wherever and whenever there is anything to, right. I mean, they started a war once, for God's sakes. But anyway, well, they weren't repiglickens back then, but you get the idea. Enter Todd Kincannon on the heels of the Wendy Davis kerfuffle. I mean, was she 19 or was she 21? Did she live in a trailer for 6 months or 6 months and 3 days? And really, you probably read it. I didn't comment on it. It seemed kind of tawdry. And maybe even pathetic. Not on her part. No. But anyway. So Todd Kincannon thinks himself quite the wag. He is a former executive director. No, really, they gave this man a little bit of power and a budget. He's a former executive director of the South Carolina Stan Repiglickin Party. And I guess he just felt like somehow, being as he is a moron, the world was in need of his expertise regarding Wendy Davis. That's when he jumped on the Twitter. Just going to share a few of these tweets with you. I mean, this is a nigh classical example of right-wing moranity. At Todd_Kincannon, January 23rd. Wendy Davis has done even more to damage modern feminism than Monica Lewinsky playing human humidor with Bill Clinton in the Oval Office. I'll be here all week. Try the veal ribs. The best thing about the Wendy Davis fiasco is this. It proves that you can still call a whore a whore. Feminazis ain't won yet, my friends. That's from the same date and from the same account. Wendy Davis stimulates the knee pad economy and a lot of penises. Retweeting Shadow Boxer 50 saying, I wonder how many knee pads she went through at Harvard. Aren't they just precious, the Morans? You straight up called her a whore. I'm guessing maybe in Texas that can still get you shot. Or at least sued. Because in neither South Carolina stan nor Texas is prostitution legal. Therefore, it is an assertion of illegal activity, which at least once upon a time, back when I was having my cup of coffee, constituted libel per se. That means you don't, it just is. It's just libelous. You know, saying, she's a whore, which he did. Wendy Davis has solved America's student loan crisis. Just find a dumbass to pay off your loans in exchange for sex. That whole Republicans learning how to talk to the women folks thing ain't working out too well, air it. LOL, you know there ain't no such thing. Retreating at what we settle for, the real prize would be pictures of her raising her kids. Breaking, Wendy Davis makes emergency phone call to Bill Clinton. Bill, is your humidor ruining? And this one's choice. That Todd Ken Cannon, he's just a laugh riot, I tell you what. He needs to go camping somewhere in the mountains tonight. In other news, Wendy Davis took a short break from blowing campaign contributors today to condemn remarks made by Mike Huckabee. And then this, retweeting Boston Randy, she is a better looker than most running for office. And Todd Kincannon, Moran, responds, Wendy Davis is a looker and a hooker. Oh, he's a poet and don't know it. You can tell by his feet. They're long, fellas. Well, goodness me. Let's see. Here's a retweet. Real men have respect. Spineless bitches talk shit online. LOL. Nobody has any respect for Wendy Davis. Not even Wendy Davis. There is your South Carolina Repiglican Moran for this, the 27th day of January, 2014. Todd Kincannon, who apparently gets off on calling women prostitutes. Ew. Reckon there's any women in his life, Todd Kincannon? Yeah, the humor's not lost on Dr. John. He says, so this is how the right wing is fighting, as Huckabee said, a war for women? Well, it's just one of the ways they're doing it, Dr. John. Oh, goodness me, because they're fighting that war for women and their libidos, you know, because they're just sitting around chewing up birth control pills, free government birth control pills for the refreshing burst of flavor, don't you know? And we'll go. I tell you what. Let's go from Todd Kincannon to single-term disgraced former military officer Alan West. Single-term former U.S. Congressman and disgraced former military officer Alan West, who wanted to make sure that he didn't let the scurrilous attacks on Mike Huckabee, who thinks that all women think of the government as Uncle Sugar, mm-hmm, Uncle Sugar, as in Sugar Daddy, right? Well, Alan West was defending the honor of Mike Huckstraby. You can almost see Mike in his little hoop skirt now, can't you? Defending Mike Huckstraby's honor in a conversation with one Steve Maltzberg. Let's check out this vigorous defense, shall we?
Governor Huckabee is right. Government is trying to be the sugar daddy. Government is trying to come in and replace having, you know, strong male role models together with women, strong women, to have strong families. And, you know, the left just got caught, you know, guilty as always, and they're trying to deflect. You know, another thing that...
Got caught at what? Calling folks prostitutes or suggesting that they can't control their libidos? I think we got caught saying that women can control their libidos and that women are more than just the sum of their reproductive organs. Guilty as charged. Full-fledged human beings entitled to... Yeah. Oh, dear God. Please continue on, bad Urkel.
Governor Huckabee said in his remarks, he talked about having a war for women as opposed to
right.
This full war on women. You know, if you want to talk about a war on women, go to Iraq, go to Afghanistan, look at what the Taliban does. You don't hear anything from the left speaking out about that. You know, look at.
No, we don't. We haven't. I seem to remember the entire so-called left, whatever there is of it, getting pretty much. Worked up about the way women are treated in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, and maybe even noting former Congressman West, that there was a secular society in Iraq in which women did not have to walk around in beekeeper suits back before a dim leader said, F Saddam, we're taking him out. Do I remember that right? Yes, I do. How about that?
Malala Yousafzai, the young 16-year-old girl who...
Yep, didn't say a word about Malala Yousafzai. That was all right-wingers out there standing up for... Not.
...was shot in the head by the Taliban, but yet no one on the... That's what the example that should be out there. But, you know, again, and I'm going to be very blunt.
Oh, boy, he's going to be blunt. That's another right-wing Moran Monday word for I'm going to be stupid. So here it comes. Duct tape and tennis ball is optional, but advisable. Kind of like yellow signs with the curves on them on a mountain road. You do well to pay attention to them.
The left tries to win the women's vote by talking from the waist down.
What, Edith? Huh?
The left tries to win the women's vote by talking from the waist down. Well, I see Jeremy in Vermont had his tennis ball and duct tape handy. I just received an interesting little direct message via the chat room. Yep, that's what it does. You got that? The left. These labels. We talk to women from the waist down. Dear me.
What we have to do on our American dream, have their pursuit of happiness, we have to talk to their heart and we have to talk to their mind. And I think that's exactly what Governor Huckabee was talking about, drawing that delineation.
Yeah, that right. That's what Mike Huckstraby was talking about. Oh, help. By the way, he says he's definitely running for Congress again in 2016 because he can't take no for an answer, I guess. Bad Urkel can't. What? I can only sit here and be offended vicariously. Not, but
I just, whether it's Mike Huckabee or this guy or the Ken Cannon guy in South Carolina, Moranzal, what in God's, what tarnation, what in the wide, wide world of sports must it be like to be a woman in the in any of those men's families? Oh, they're just real sweethearts. They're just they're just out there being over the top to make a point. Did I ask you to say anything? I'm sorry, dear. Well, there's a new phrase. Jeremy in the chat room. What planet is this drummed out pistol whipper from again? Drummed out pistol whipper. So we've got bitches, whores, feminazis, hookers, and lookers, and they and the left talks to women from the waist down. There's just no bottom. There's just no bottom to the to the right wing sewer, is there? I didn't think so. And of course, just in case anybody's wondering. No, I didn't watch the Grammys last night. Just didn't. Just didn't. But it's my, I'm informed that there was a mass wedding at the Grammys. The last time I heard of one of those, the Reverend Moon was doing it at Shea Stadium or something. But there were in the group of people who were married en masse on the Grammys, some same-sex couples who were getting married en masse at the Grammys. And, oh, dear me, don't you know that that just drove the culture warriors bananas. Yeah. So the song was a Same Love, performed by Ryan Lewis and Macklemore. And 34 couples got married during the ceremony. Enter Eric Rush. Now, Eric Rush, like me, did not watch the Grammys. But whereas I'm not prone to pontificate about them, well, that won't slow down Eric Rush.
They whipped out this getting political with the mass wedding, including gay couples. This, of course, in addition to being open propaganda, solidifies the, I guess, Hollywood's role as a generally a disgusting pack of subverts who are, you know, down with the whole change America into a sensualist concerned with nothing but their creature comfort, sex, drugs, rock and roll. You know, they're very good indeed while we're being...
No, dumbass. The lyrics is sex and drugs and rock and roll is all my body needs. Not very good indeed. Oh, what a... Well, somebody stick him back in his locker. I mean, really, does the right wing just intentionally put the neo-maxi zoom dweebies out there to speak for him, or is it just, I don't know.
Shepherded down the path to hell. I was on, I didn't watch the Grammys, of course, I was on social media, though, watching, and you could almost feel it, and then you saw it in the Twitter streams of when they whipped out this gay wedding thing.
There we are with the whipping out again. What is he? I don't know. Maybe while he was tweeting, he was watching Blazing Saddles? What?
Which was just, you know, makes you want to vomit.
Funny. I didn't watch them either, and yet somehow I had... All right, there was a really, really bad pizza involved, but that's the closest I got to actual nausea.
This event took place on stage to resemble a giant chapel, which offended a whole lot of people. And then you had the...
Name them. Sorry.
These couples out there getting quote-unquote married.
quote unquote married. Not married, just quote unquote married.
One of the couples who tied the knot was the sister of Ryan Lewis. I guess he's a hip hop guy.
I guess he's in that hip hop. I don't know. I was marching against the Charleston last week. These flappers are going to be the end of civilization as we know it.
Lewis's sister, lawyer Laura, and her boyfriend Alex. I don't know if Alex is a man or a woman.
Anybody's guess. There goes the culture. It goes on and on. Let's see. Flush Flimball said the Grammys were just sad.
Nobody watches the Grammys, my friends, but because they have not strayed from the liberal path, they are still loved and adored and praised.
My favorite, though, because it involves typing in all capital letters, comes from Texas radio host Lynn Woolley, which immediately makes me think of that wonderful scene from Bull Durham when Tim Robbins is singing, "Sometimes a woman just gets woolly." It's not woolly, it's weary. Lynn Woolley, got the cap. Oh, my God. I don't know these people, but Macklemore and Ryan Lewis' Same Love Gay Anthem became the theme song for 33 Newlyweds, with Queen Latifah officiating the marriages. As the network CBS was complicit in this celebration of perversity, and then the screaming starts, because all caps, "Would somebody please tell me where this county goes from here? Homosexuals have taken over the country, and I'm just curious to see what they do next. I guess they want a gay president, maybe a gay pope, paren, exclamation point, paren," which I don't, are you saying that, I don't know. Don't know what that means. Gay Pope. How do you make that sound? Is it? I don't know. That's D-U-N-N-O. I didn't see the gay stuff. I don't think anybody saw any gay stuff or any hetero stuff. I mean, and you know, going back to Eric Rush, there was no whipping out. "But I got bored quickly by the crap that now passes as music."
Yeah, why can't we have a nice minuet once in a while? Yeah. Get off my lawn.
"And I decided to pop in a disc." Okay. They're clueless, aren't they? "And watch an episode of," all caps, "The Mentalist. I love The Mentalist as it is all about logic. The Grammy Awards were all about perversion. So what can we do? I suppose that a few years from now, same-sex marriage will be as common as divorce is now. I'll bet it fades out with time as more and more men realize that women are pretty dang special. I guess we'll see. I wonder what Patrick Jane would say." Whew. Tequila. It's not just for breakfast anymore. Dan writing in, "It seems that Mr. Alan West is the only one talking from below his waist. He's pulling stuff out of his butt." Score one for Dan. Yes, Kevin, Todd Kincannon was an executive director of the South Carolina Repig Lickin' Party. Kevin notes, okay, that means a perpetual Moran Monday nomination of the guy that hired him. What an idiot. You can imagine, okay, this from Steve. No, he's not a moron. He's a dick. Ron and Raleigh. The wrong way to look at it. "Hey, Bob, on You Know Who's program today, some yahoo said there is no war on women by the Repig Lickin' Party because none of their anti-reproductive rights bills keeps women from having babies. The only reproductive right a woman has is to have that baby." Signed, Ron and Raleigh, P.S. Pardon me while I whip this out. And Dr. John, just trying to keep the wheels on the pavement. Wait,
We talk to women from the waist down? Well, hell, Bob, the GOP legislates women from the waist down. Score another one for Dr. John. Wow, but I got a, see, I got a grammatical problem with that whole waist down thing. I don't necessarily know what it means. Image wise. Because he's using the word like does not appear, so therefore it is not a simile. This is like that. It is not analogous. There's no analog involved. He's using a metaphor saying that one thing is the same as the other. And the direct quote is, the left tries to win the women's vote by talking from the waist down. I got no clue what that means. And here I am, I've been working on the art of knowing words for, gosh, it'll soon be 49 years or thereabouts. And I'm adrift. I'm at sea. I'm lost. The left tries to win the women's vote by talking from the waist down. Does that mean that the left have some sort of speaking orifices below the waist? Or does that mean that the left sort of bends and talks directly to the lady parts? I guess my takeaway on this is that these people are so damn clueless and utterly stupid, they can't even deliver a halfway competent insult. At least we know that people, that there was disgust. Oh, goody, disgust. It was a busy weekend for the Morans. A really busy weekend. Yeah, it was busy. Well, it was a big winning weekend for the NRA. In case you didn't realize, there was a shooting at a mall in Maryland. And then, here in almost level West by God, Virginia, two other people died. Because, you know, freedom! Wolverines! Dear Lord in heaven. No, really, a shooter busted out at a mall in Columbia, Maryland, and went from lawful gun owner to awful gun owner in the space that it takes to cause the trigger to engage the firing pin to strike the cap and the rifling and the bullet and dead people. And somewhere, Wayne LaPierre was probably rubbing himself in an airport men's room out of sheer glee. And it just got better for him. Because here in West Virginia, which I think we can safely say we've had our fair share of troubles of late, you get, oh dear. You get a guy named Rodney Black who lives down in Putnam County. No, Campbell County. I'm sorry, Campbell County. 62 years old, Rodney Bruce Black
lived next to a lot that had an outbuilding on it. A couple of brothers by the name of Garrick Hopkins and Carl Hopkins Jr., who is from sort of not too far from my neck of the woods over here in Fayette County, went to look at the empty lot because, lo and behold, they had just purchased that lot. And they had ownership rights to the outbuilding that sat upon it. Well, Rodney Black, who is white, saw the two men, aged 60 and 61, opening the outbuilding, and he just, I guess, used his kitchen window for a bench rest and murdered the two individuals in cold blood. Because he was protecting freedom. The release from the Sheriff's Department, the Campbell County Sheriff's Department, said Garrick Hopkins took his brother to his newly purchased lot to show him the property where he and his family were to build a new residence in the coming weeks. The outbuilding in question was on the Hopkins property and contained no belongings of the suspect, Rodney Black. Rodney Black didn't say, "Hey! You fellers, get away from that outbuilding that does not belong to me on property that I don't own, or I'm going to shoot." No. He just murdered them. For freedom. I mean, there weren't even enough extenuating circumstances to fix it up so the deputies could at least charge him with second-degree heat of passion murder. No, he was cold and calculated. He took dead aim. He killed one. And then he just moved right over and killed the other one. So he was charged with two counts of first-degree murder. Then he picked up the phone and called 911. Oh, he really did. Rodney Bruce Black, 62 years old, called 911, and said he'd seen two men entering his outbuilding, and he shot them from his window. He didn't even leave the comfort of his home. I mean, there was snow on the ground and stuff, right? It's just pathetic. But it's okay. It's okay with Wayne LaPierre. It's okay with every member of the National Rifle Association. It's okay with Gun Owners of America. These two individuals managed to get through 60 and 61 years of life in the brutality that is West Virginia. And they were going to build a nice little house where they would finish out their years. Down in Campbell County. And I'm sure he won't fess up to it. But anybody want to take it? Pure speculation. Not worth a damn. But anybody want to take a wild guess at what Rodney Bruce Black was thinking when he saw a couple? Yeah. Not in my neighborhood! By the way, when they went to arrest him, it was determined that Rodney Bruce Black had what law enforcement authorities refer to as a large cache of weapons and ammunition. Yeah. Because you never know when the federal government's going to come with their black helicopters and their blue-helmeted UN thugs and take the bus down your door and take away your freedom. These people aren't becoming. They have become a danger to the ongoing existence of civil society. The Rodney Eugene Blacks, lawful gun owners, are a plague upon us. According to the Huntington Herald Dispatch article, neighbor Regina Lafferty told WCHS, the WCHS report, that her children had just walked across the property earlier that day. Regina Lafferty said, it wasn't even his building. If you have a concern, you call 911 first. You don't shoot and then call. Well, you do when you're protecting freedom. Wolverines. Ms. Lafferty probably doesn't appreciate freedom the way Rodney Bruce Black appreciates freedom. He knows what freedom means. Freedom means Second Amendment. The hell, the rest of them. It was an interesting day here in Mount Snowbegone Saturday. I shared this little story the other night with the Skype group, but in light of, well, this story, it was kind of weird. Took off on, I was kind of tied up most of Saturday. And when the teleconference I was wrapped up in concluded, I jumped in the car and Ferg came with me and we determined to go across to Beckley in search of a somewhat better space heater. And we had to go to three places before we found one that was both economically feasible and sufficient to the needs. And this was when it got interesting. So I walk into Lowe's. I said, where's the heaters? They're all gone because of this here global warming we're having that's got things so damn cold. Global warming. Al Gore. I guess we're not going to have to hear no more about this damn global warming now. I mean, look at it. It's cold out there. To which I politely responded, actually, extreme shifts and extreme swings in weather patterns are to be expected under the climate change models. Huh? Okay, so we left there. And we went to, Sam's Club. Pardon me, could you direct me to the heaters? Yeah, I can. They're right down there. See that big old air mattress down there? Yeah, just go to the air mattress and turn right. I got several models there. They're selling pretty good now that we know there ain't no such thing as global warming. I'm not kidding you. Straight up. Two in a row. Gave the same polite response, turned around, left. Sears, where we found, for the right price and the right qualities, the right unit. Nice young man, ringing us up, getting us out. And understand, in all three of these instances, I never initiated the discussion beyond do you have or would you direct me to, never said a God-blessed word about global warming, climate change, nothing. You know, I was not wearing my Stop Mountaintop Removal t-shirt. I wasn't carrying along my
portable tree for hugging. And hell, Ferg was wearing camo. I mean, we weren't giving off liberal progressive rays or anything, as far as I could tell. So he rings us up and he says, "Yeah, thank you for coming by. Hope you enjoy it. I guess maybe now people will realize that global warming's a hoax." Three for three. And at that point in time, well, bless his heart, Ferg was doing Sherpa duty and carrying the box. And he goes, "Come on, Dad." And I said, "You know, son, you seem like a fairly smart young man," talking to the sales fella. I said, "I'd be careful spouting off foolishness like what you just said. Because global climate change is very real. The state of California, where 50% of our produce comes from, is locked in drought. Australia catches fire at the drop of a hat or a match. It's warmer in Helsinki, Finland right now than it is in West Virginia. And you want to tell me there's no global climate change? Son, stop listening to the friends of coal so much." You're not doing yourself any favors. Global climate change is real. And it's happening. And this is evidence that it's happening. There's a big difference between climate and weather, son. The climate is changing. And bless his heart, he said, "Yeah, but glaciers. I mean, the ice age and stuff." I said, "We have not had warming this fast on this planet in millions and millions of years, and I strongly suggest that you go back and look at what happened to the planet the last time this happened. Hint, it has nothing to do with ice ages. Stay warm now. Drive careful." And we got back out to the vehicle, at which point in time we were engaged in a whiteout. No kidding. Couldn't see 2 feet in front of your face. And drove home in that. It took as long to get from Beckley back here as it used to take my grandparents before the four-lane highway was put through. But, you know, that's the beauty of four-wheel drive and putting her down in low and just letting her walk down the mountain. Okay, Devin says people can smell the liberal on me. It's like they've got some sort of liberal gaydar. Yeah, because I use them big words like please and thank you and do you have as opposed to air you got. Meanwhile, going back to Mr. Black, who shoots in the back, Ron and Raleigh noting, "Bob, Bob, Bob." There's always a lesson coming after one of those. "Don't you know a clear case of stand your ground when you see one? He stood his ground in his house." It's about the size of it. Michael pointing out, you're trying to make sense out of Alan West, Bob. Move along. By the way, who had to listen to his batshittery? Whoever the weirdos are who tune into Steve Maltzberg's program probably don't have much in the way of brains left. You know, zombie radio. Oh, thanks to Sal. Thank you very much, Sal. Sal has gotten us all off and running and started on this evening's fundraising. Much appreciated. And hopefully help will come from other quarters, and we'll
finish the month of January to the good. The 31st is on Friday. And we'll be all right if we can just keep up with the fundraising goals day by day until that day. By the way, Groundhog Day will fall on a Sunday this year. Not that there's anything particularly interesting about that, but Groundhog Day does mark the halfway point of winter. I remember seeing an old farmer's almanac prediction that we were going to have a warmer than usual winter this year. I must have inadvertently turned to the page for Moscow. By the way, some notes coming in via our buddy the Angry Indian. One, Eric Rush is a freak. Two, by the way, I didn't watch the Grammys either. Three, Alan West is a war criminal, as well as a wannabe white racist biker. Ew. Oh, okay. Okay, this from Asa in Vancouver. You just smell like one of them socialist commies, Bob. The right-wingers can smell you from a mile away. That's a little disconcerting. And there I am trying to use cologne and everything. I guess you just can't mask it, can you? Yeah, that's what we'll call it in the chat room. Stockton Larry says, we'll call it Libdar. Chat room moderator Sparky has deployed the dancing banana. He notes the dancing banana emoticon. He says, there's an 80% chance of precipitation on Wednesday. I don't think they've had that high a chance of precipitation in months, have you, Sparky? Rain would be a good thing. Precipitation, you know, maybe snow covering the top of Mount Shasta and what have you. I hope so. I sincerely hope so. Now, Devin pointing out, I am an enemy combatant in the war on science. And then this, because it is Moran Monday. They've got themselves a new bill in, going through the legislature out in South Dakota Stan. They want to enshrine discrimination in state law. Never mind the U.S. Constitution or anything like that. No, hell no. This coming via our buddy Steve. He says, they found us out. And what he means by that, this proposed law by Representative Steve Hickey. No, really? Steve Hickey. Precious. His next door neighbor is Tim Thingy. Bill Whatsis lives across the street. The sponsor, just straight from Right Wing Watch. Well, probably ought not use the word straight now, should I? The sponsor of a South Dakota bill that would allow businesses to deny services to same-sex weddings or any others that violate their sincerely held religious beliefs, because there's nothing like a wishy-washy adverb like sincerely in a piece of legislation. No, really, it was. It was sincere. The sponsor of a South Dakota bill that would allow businesses to deny services to same-sex weddings or any others that violate their sincerely held religious beliefs told the Associated Press today that gay rights are taking the United States, and this here is a quote, down the road of Iran. Because everybody in the world knows that Iran is just one big gay party. Only it's not. Representing Steve Hickey, South Dakota's in the house. Representing Steve Hickey, Republican of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which immediately calls into question the mentality of a certain community in South Dakota that will be known hereafter as Sioux Falls. He's one of two primary sponsors of a bill that would allow any person or business to, quote, decline to provide certain wedding services or goods due to the free exercise of religion. One gets the sense that they're trying to head off a potential problem coming their way. Is South Dakota a gay marrying state now? Who knows? But anyway, Steve Hickey wants to let people know that they can tell the gay folks that, well, they just can't. No, they're going to refuse service to them. You can't rent a tuxedo, right? Because that's what business is all about. Oh well. Hickey told the AP that religious rights need to continue to trump gay rights in order to keep the country from heading down the road to Iran. By the way, if you're gay in Iran, you can be beheaded, flogged, what have you. It seems more like Steve Hickey's the one going down the road to Iran. But anyway, Hickey, oh, okay, here's how he got to office. Hickey, pastor of a Sioux Falls church, said a court ruling legalizing gay marriage in South Dakota might expose him to lawsuits or prosecution because he believes in traditional marriage between a man and a woe man and a concubine, hundred or two, because those are traditional, right? Or maybe it, traditional marriage where, you know, you're tired of getting it on with the hubby, so you hand your maidservant over to him and says, do thou with her as thou wishest, like it says there in the Bible. Religious rights need to continue to trump gay rights, Hickey said. Otherwise, we're heading down the road of Iran, where it's convert or die, be quiet or die. If we want to talk about church and state, this is a bill that keeps the state out of my church. Boy. You got this so far? Yeah. Keeps the state out of his church. Now, I have a feeling this is all stemming from a case out of Oregon. You remember Melissa's Cakes or whatever it was, where they moved out of their business location and started working out of their homes because they got busted for violating Oregon's human rights law because they told a couple that they wouldn't make no wedding cake for their abominable woman-on-woman sex wedding. Yeah. I just love it because I forget which newspaper it was, but a newspaper in Oregon decided to put their claim that this was not anti-gay bigotry, but a statement of their sincerely held religious beliefs, see, to the test. So some folks at the newspaper quietly picked up the phone and called to order a cake to celebrate a divorce. A divorce cake. They took the money, they made the cake. Then somebody else called and ordered up a cake with a pentagram on it to celebrate a satanic wedding or something? I don't know. They made the cake. They made every cake that was ordered, except the one for the marrying up lesbians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, This is Mr. Hickey. I'm sorry, brother, pastor, preacher Hickey, trying to get out in front of that. Hey, because now here's the fun part. This would probably be a violation. His law, the bill he's proposed in South Dakota stand, probably a violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Because they went on to interview him about that topic, and he said, let the market bear it out. If there's some racist group, they can boycott it. oddly enough, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as the folks at Right Wing Watch point out, that's kind of prohibited conduct. But then again, I'm guessing Pastor Hickey is a big fan of Rand Paul, because that's kind of what Rand Paul said a few years back, isn't it? I would have let the market take care of it. Got it. VJ writing in, Farmer's Almanac. Bob, the Farmer's Almanac you mentioned must have been talking about Los Angeles. We've been getting 70 and 80 degree weather for 4 weeks. Serious drought. What part of California isn't in drought? And yeah, mild winter. I mean, it's all well and good, but rain is, it's part of the process. And It Never Rains in Southern California is only supposed to be a song title, not a fact of life. So that's where we find ourselves here at 3 minutes past seven. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes, John.
Hey, it's John. Sorry, I was on the speaker. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Well, I'm doing good. My veggie lasagna turned out pretty watery, so maybe some folks in the commune can give me some tips for next time.
Ooh, okay, we'll work on it.
Listen, I wanted to say good on you for standing up on the global climate change thing, because you know it absolutely chaps me when people see me and assume that because of, you know, my color, my privilege, whatever, that I'm in their nasty little racist, anti-science, fundamentalist club. And that's what was happening with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there were presumptions being made.
Right, exactly. And it comes up with, you know, with me all the time, you know, it's little snide references to people in my city, you know, when they're like, well, boy, you know, this town's just really different than it was a generation ago. You know, it's that little code, and it just...
Really? Different how?
Hell out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, whatever do you mean? Yeah, exactly. So it's really obvious, and that's, you know, the fact that you got that three times, I mean, I think there might be some
calls. Well, I felt like some sort of climate change St. Peter or something, only I wasn't the one denying.
Well, wait, you would be... Would you be Peter or would you be Paul then, taking the message?
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I just had three different Peters denying before the... Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It just puts you in that position. It's got to be irritating for you and for the other, you know, progressive folks in really red states. I mean, I assume that you get that sort of thing a lot. So I was just really, I was happy to hear your response, and I think that's really great and way to go. And if you,
well, I got to admit, I was getting some askance glances from Ferg going, no, Dad, not tonight, please, Dad, no, let's just go home. Come on, Dad. But you know, you can't just say because if I do that, well, especially in front of my son, I'm not going to be a hypocrite.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if this is the worldview that these people are all exposed to, you know, then, you know, silence is complicity, right? You know?
So, yeah. And you're absolutely right, John, because there were assumptions being made. What are those assumptions, John, that everybody just is in the club? Everybody, if you're in West Virginia, you must therefore deny global warming because you're a friend of coal. I mean, I've been trying to drill down through this for about 3 days now.
Yeah, it's that. It's an entree to sort of the message that they're getting constantly too. You know, I mean, obviously if you're only exposed to that, you know, you of course know that there is no such thing as climate change because coal, you know, and in an odd way, it even touches on, you know, what Dr. Bill was talking about. I mean, because if, you know, the fact is this drive towards local control and local responsibility for school curricula, I mean, that is just, to my mind, a thinly veiled code for we don't want to teach our kids science because it upsets our beliefs. And I think that it snowballs and it reciprocates generation after generation, and we get people who almost can't think critically.
You know what? I think there is an analogy here. I read an article earlier today talking about the crippling degree to which early childhood malnutrition and starvation is affecting Afghanistan.
Mm.
And they point out that proper nutrition in the first 2 years of life is absolutely critical to the ability of a child to go on and learn in later years.
Absolutely.
And they've done the studies, and the children wind up with cognitive deficits. They wind up with growth deficits, so they don't grow as big and strong as they should. And then when that person who has been given the cognitive or nutritional short end of the stick then reproduces, they reproduce, and it becomes a vicious cycle of malnutrition, reproduction, another malnourished, and it's sort of a depression of human ability. And I think in some ways this is that, because one generation begets another generation of people who are enthralled to the coal industry, in denial of science, who won't stand up for decent public education. They've got a bond issue that will actually raise taxes in Beckley coming up, and the school system is scared to death that it won't pass.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't, I'm not going to pay any more taxes for those government schools.
Right.
And I
bet you anything that anti bond thing is getting some outside funding. I mean, I don't know that the Koch specifically, but I mean, I know that groups like that are very, very supportive of anti-bond things, because the agenda is charter schools and private schools. And the more we can do to erode public schools, public education, even, you know, through things like packing school boards and, you know, rejecting bond issues to.
Yeah. What was that story the other night that there are 41 charter schools in Texas that are teaching creationism now?
Yeah, that struck a chord with me for sure. Right. Exactly. And that's the outcome of privatizing education. I mean, not all of those schools are private, but I mean, most of them are. That's the model. And that's one of the outcomes. And that's also an outcome of this insistence upon local control. And to that sense, I think that you're right. There is, I mean, I see, you know, a bifurcation in education of students I deal with, depending on where they come from. That two Americas, meme that John Edwards was putting out during his run. I'm sorry, I still think that is a very powerful message, and that's something that I see, at least. And you know, I hear you talking, and I think the same thing. And I can't escape the conclusion that people who are supporting these things want that.
Do they?
And that's not.
Do they actively know? I mean, do they? Do they know that's what they're going to get? I mean,
no, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't want to create the impression I'm talking about a whole bunch of people in a dark room somewhere, twirling their pencil mustaches and saying, ha ha ha, look what we can do. That, you know, conspiracy theories are inherently conservative, but that is an unintended outcome, because the focus of these folks who are doing everything they can to eliminate local control, to eliminate options for students in under-resourced areas. They're driven by money, and it's money that they get that isn't shared, that isn't socialized, and that is an outcome of private profit is damage to the commons, and education is the commons.
Yes.
Water is the commons. That's how I see it. Unintended consequences, you know. But with a very proximate cause.
Yeah, and see, it went even further, John, because after those three, we stopped one more place, and once again, another unbidden conversation, as the clerk looked at Ferg and me and said, Well, you know, that's, and I forget even what the origin of the conversation was, but he says, well, that's what you can expect out of Obama. They're trying to take away our guns, and now they're taking away all our ammunition. And at this point in time, I mean, I think I can be praised. That's a mighty strong word, but for the forbearance that I had shown in the first three climate deniers, with that guy, I just stopped and said, now wait just a confounded minute.
Mm-hmm.
At what point since January 21st, 2009, has Barack Obama tried to take anybody's guns away? Well, he did. And I said, no, he did not. The Second Amendment is still on the books. There has not been one introduction of an amendment in the Congress that would repeal the Second Amendment that would have to be passed by a two-thirds vote of both houses of Congress and passed by two-thirds of the state. It has never daggum happened. And he said, it hasn't? I said, no, it hasn't. I said, and you're sitting here saying this on a day when two guys, when one guy from this very community got blown away for walking around on his own property, and three people are dead at a mall in Maryland. This is a big win day for the NRA, buddy. Must feel mighty proud.
What was the reaction?
He said, well, I didn't mean nothing by it. I said, no, you didn't mean nothing by it, except you meant to tell a falsehood because somebody else has told you a falsehood. So you are going to repeat the falsehood.
Right. But this is all part and parcel because, you know, he's working under the doctrine of revealed truth. You know, somebody in authority tells you, and then there is no point in looking into it. Even no matter how ridiculous it sounds, I mean, on the face of it, the president wants to take our guns or is taking our guns and ammunition. It's hard to imagine a more absurd statement, something on the face of it, that anyone who has a civics class should know that is ridiculous. But you hear it from an authority figure. You don't look into it because there's no point, because it's obviously true. And this is what happens when you're brought up in a
At this point, I want to go to a community where if somebody's going to start a conversation with me, it'll be, hey, won't it be great when we've all got solar panels?
Yeah.
Or if somebody's just going to tell me an outright lie, it'll be, hey, Barack Obama's just offered to put forward a plan to put solar panels on every, or maybe just have somebody look up and say, damn, gun violence is really hurting our country, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, that has cross purposes too, John, because I really do object when people say, well, you know, it's obvious you live in a place that's really got some backward ideas. Why don't you move Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't for a variety of reasons. The leading one of which is economic.
Yeah.
You know, this is not Dust Bowl, Oklahoma, and I can't just load up Jethro and Ellie Mae and Granny in the truck and drive to Beverly Hills because I just struck oil now outside of Bug Tussle.
You hear that very often from extraordinarily privileged folks. The mainstream liberals. You know,
yeah, and that's the thing. I hear that from, we used to hear it all the time from the friends of coal. Why don't y'all move?
Uh-huh.
Until we looked at him and said, Buster, we've been here longer than you have. Why don't you leave?
Yeah, right.
So that kind of died down a little bit, but like during the water disaster that's still going on, even though people are being hung out to dry now, today was the last day of water delivery in Kanawha County. Now I hear it from, you know, my fellow so-called liberals. Well, why don't you go somewhere else, Bob?
Right, right, because there's a refusal among that bunch to acknowledge class and acknowledge economic privilege, any of that stuff. Because I mean, I really think that all of that all these things we're talking about reduces to that. And there's just this blanket refusal to deal with structural issues like that among sort of the mainstream, the big left. It's all about sort of.
Yeah, you know, and my, you know, sort of I've lost all patience. I've lost all patience, John. And now I just say, okay, send me the deed to the 1 acre with the house on it. free and clear, and I'll get packing.
And you, right, exactly. Yeah, and you hear this, you know, boy, you sure live in a backwards place with a lot of stupid ideas, you know, from people who, you know, are living in places where, you know, I bet you even in Massachusetts, churches get tax exemption. I bet you even in Massachusetts, black folks don't earn the same as white folks, you know.
Or women, or,
like,
yeah.
Or women, or, right, exactly. I mean, it's under the surface. The oppression is under the surface in really left places. And you can talk about things like solar panels on roofs, which is great. I'm all for that. But we got to also fix the damn schools, fix the damn economy, and get some economic parity going.
Right. You know? And I mean, there's all kinds of stuff to look at. For instance, there is a greater proportion of people who have been given bad information because, just like any third world country, John, this state and this region, Central Appalachia, has had an ongoing case of brain drain for the last couple of generations. You know, you probably heard Bill in Cleveland talking about all the West Virginians he worked with in his career.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was a huge out-migration there. There was an out-migration in the late 80s and 90s down to North Carolina. Just about anywhere you go in this country, you're most likely to find some West Virginian pining for home. But yeah. They could not stay. They were young. They went to school out of state, and they stayed out of state. Because, you know, you don't want that invigorating that invigorating talent coming back here and upsetting Cole's apple cart.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is that the brain drain for West Virginia is probably pretty much done, because in our brave new information economy, there's no more jobs, and we don't manufacture quite as much anymore to draw folks away to the plants in Ohio and in Michigan. So folks are going to be staying in Appalachia. So you got that going for you.
at the same time that I'm looking at Ferg going, we got to get you out of here. And looking at my daughters and saying, you know, don't plan on going to college here. You got to leave.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it, for me, it's the feeling of telling somebody that, you know, getting somebody out of a burning building. Whew. Yeah.
I hear you. Well, listen, I think on that note, I'll get out of your way. By the way, you sound great compared to Friday, by the way.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
We've been tweaking, and I think I'm going to have the regular streaming machine back online, probably finish up the work after the program, so cross your fingers.
Okay, good deal. I mean, Friday wasn't awful, but it's a marked improvement tonight.
So. All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah. All
Take
right.
care, John.
Best to the family. Bye.
All right. Bye now. Dr. John, let's keep going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Goodness me, it's Tracy.
How the hell are you, boo?
You know, trying to stay warm.
Yeah.
Dealing with occasional bouts of unrestrained ignorance, but, you know.
Well... You know, I was listening to what John was saying about, you know, and what you were talking about the people in Oregon. And I think I told you about when the woman I called about a photo booth for my wedding. And she knew it was a gay wedding and everything. And then, you know, I basically hired her off the phone without even meeting her. And then I called back to, you know, give her some more business. And she went off on me about Leviticus. And
oh, no, not Leviticus.
Yes. And which was a mistake because, you know, I'm a Christian and I read the Bible. So, you know, I said, well, okay, since I'm going to hell, I said, well, have you ever had a shrimp cocktail? I said, have you ever spoken up in church? Are you wearing a cotton poly blend? And most importantly, did you fornicate with your husband before you got married? Because all that's in Leviticus, too, if you really want to go.
Yeah, they got a big pile of rocks for all of those, Tracy.
A whole pile of rocks. You know, and then she's like, well, what about Paul? I said, well, see, here's the deal. I said, I don't follow Paul. I said, you know, you can talk about Leviticus, you can talk about Genesis and go into the New Testament and even pull out, you know, Paul, who whatever. But bottom line is the Lord and Savior that I follow, Jesus Christ, has never once, I said, find me in the Bible where Jesus said anything about homosexuality. I said, because it seems to me that everything is, you know, open for interpretation except for that. I said, because according to the Bible, you know, as rich people, we're supposed to get, you know, if we earn a certain amount of money, we're supposed to be giving all that to the poor and this, that, and so forth and so. Oh, I just, you know, and speaking of rich people, how about those Koch brothers? I have been listening to the news and listening to, you know, the bullshit that is on the news. And it just all goes to mind, like you were just talking about how this idiot was on you about, you know, that the breaking the code. Because I know the code, you know, even though I'm black and I'm stupid, I'm not supposed to know the code, but I know the code. And like that chuckle, chuckle, wink, wink, elbow, elbow, you know, those people. As John McCain's like that guy, you know, I'm tired of hearing that bullshit. And see, I've gotten to the point now that I call people on their shit. Because when you come at me with the white privilege, I get ape shit on you. And not ape shit in such a way that it's an angry black woman ape shit, because I'm very capable of going there. But I do it in a more refined, civilized way, even though the people who are talking to me do not grant me the common courtesy as such. You know, and it's just, I'm on, and excuse my white friends, and I love all y'all, but I just yesterday saw a special screening of 12 Years a Slave. And, yeah. And because they had a Q&A afterwards, mm-hmm. The magnificent Danny Glover was there doing a commentary after the film. And so they opened it up for questions. And so, of course, the proper little white girl gets up and says that she's after the movie. So was slavery kind of like puppy mills?
No, she didn't. No, Tracy, we've been friends for a long time. You tell me right now that you're just telling me a big old fat lie.
No, I am not.
Was slavery like puppy mills?
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell, I think we're done for the night, Tracy.
Is that the moron Monday?
That's Toaster.
Yeah, because.
Was it like puppy mills? Okay, mm-hmm. first, no fair without a little backgrounder. You want to give us an approximate age? I mean, if this is a 9-year-old, I'm okay.
No. I would say mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And she's one of those, you know, because it was sponsored.
And we're talking Southern California.
Yes, Pasadena. We had, you know, we went to Limley Theater. They spot out the whole theater for this showing of 12 Years a Slave. So it was for, you know, KPFK, Pacifica Radio out here. So, you know, this, you know, is a liberal radio station, one of the few that are still left that is, you know, not like, you know, KCET and PBS and all those, or, that are sponsored by anybody other than the public, you know.
Right.
And so, again, like those people who come to you and say, why don't you just move?
Well, I mean, when was there a gasp in the audience when it got said?
There was because, of course, there were black people in the audience, you know. There was every black person.
Did she hear the gasp?
Yes, it was the audible gasp.
I mean, did she look around like, what did I say? I mean,
yeah.
Was there a teachable moment?
Yeah. Well, see, here's the beautiful thing about it. Let's see, because of the way they formatted it, they didn't go ask a question and then an answer. They, you know, everybody had a chance to say what they had asked their question, and then at the end, Danny Glover and this wonderful woman who's a professor of African American history at USC. I can't think of her name right now, but they took all the comments or questions at the end and put it all out. And so when they addressed the whole puppy mill question, because I could see Danny Glover's face, like, no, this bitch did not just get up and say, was slavery an equivalent to puppy mills?
I bet she meant really well by it, too.
And see, again, it's that privilege. And then, of course, you know, I stood up. You know I did. I almost ran to the microphone, being who I am. And I said, you know, all aside about the puppy, because I didn't have to come out and say about the puppy mill, but I said, well, you know, I said, since slaves were bred, and, you know, and I said something about, you know, I said it's amazing about white privilege, about how when you could take something like slavery, and again, I didn't say equate it with puppy mills, but we need films, more films like this, to show the brutality. Because I'm sorry, I mean, I care about puppies just about as much as the next person, but I'm sorry, when people start equating human beings with dogs, it makes me crazy. It really does. You know, some dog, I mean, I don't know what a puppy mill is like, but I guarantee you the puppies weren't being raped in the puppy mill.
No, the puppies aren't chopping cotton either.
Right,
or hoeing tobacco, or building a national capital,
or being worried about being kidnapped as a free man, and has no recourse, because Solomon Northrop was one of the few free men or women that were kidnapped that actually got home. And only because he was black were they able to do this. I mean, this is when you start, if anybody, you know, anybody realizes, and I'm pretty sure everybody in the Horn family knows about how once the transatlantic slave trade ended, they could bring no more slaves from Africa. So what did they have to do? They had to breed them. So
yes.
There were women and men and children who were free. Born free, not even, you know, not even that their parents were slaves, or their parents and their parents were not slaves. And so they had no idea of the brutality of slavery. And then they were brought to these states, and with no regret, they couldn't get away because they were kidnapped.
Yes.
And even when Solomon Northrop got away and he got home, it was only because he couldn't sue anybody. The men that kidnapped him were never brought to justice. Because you're black. So what? This country hasn't changed at all. And then that's it about, you know, I'm watching this movie and watching the trauma that these men and women went through. How the men are being forced to watch their daughters and their mothers and their sisters being raped, and they could do nothing to stop the rape because it was a part of the seasoning, was part of, this is what your life is going to be. Deal with it. And so you have a whole generation of black folks with all this trauma being raped, their children. There was this one saying, this woman had been sold away from her children, because of course her daughter was a gorgeous, her father was white. She bore a child for the master, and of course the missus didn't want to see a constant reminder of this child that her husband bore. I mean, so she had to get rid of the slave and the kids. Then her children are being sold away from her right before her very eyes. And so when she gets brought to the new plantation, the woman's like, you know, you just need some rest and something to eat, because soon enough you'll forget about your children. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you have you know, fat, you know, so you have all these generations, and then you have the freed slaves, and then the children of these slaves, and like my great great grandmother, who taught me how to be a certain way, as when it comes to white people, because that is what they learned how to survive. But they never talked about what happened to them because they never got the help that they needed, the psychological, you know, the brutality and the help that anybody black would need, anybody would need. Because if you think about slavery in today's terms, they would be considered crimes against humanity. Plain and simple.
Well, as long as a country that wasn't the United States was perpetrating.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
With that caveat.
With that caveat, let's not forget that, you know, and I'm still waiting for my 40 acres and a mule. But
because if we do it, it can't possibly be a war crime.
No, it cannot.
It cannot. If the United States does it, it cannot be a crime against humanity. It's kind of like when did Richard Nixon say it to David Frost? If the president does it, by definition, it's not illegal.
It's not illegal.
Yeah, it's the same principle.
It's the same principle. I mean, but then again, you have that's, you know, you got that cognitive dissonance where it can't be wrong because see, you have to make sure these people are being portrayed as less than human. You're not human because if they're human, then you can't be you good God fearing folk who are sitting back and letting this happen. You can't justify. Well, I can justify it now because, well, they're lazy, they're shiftless. I mean, you still got people like Sarah Palin saying our president is shucking and jiving. And we all know what she meant by that. But then again, if you really know what shucking and jiving meant, that was another form of survival.
Sure.
Because slave parents knew that if their child saw, if master saw that their child was a good producer or anything like that, he or she would be likely sold. So parents are like, this is what you have to do to survive. This is what you have to do not to be sold away from me. And then we fast forward, you know, how many hundreds of years later, and we have the young man in Texas who kills four people because he's suffering from a disease called influenza.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
But then you have a young black man who, I don't know, stole a car or, you know, whatever, stole some food or whatever, and he's on an ankle bracelet.
Oh, for heck, you know, look, bracelet. I mean, back here in Appalachistan, Tracy, it's out there for everybody. The privilege is shiny, and it's not even in this case. You can't even point to something like race. He was on this program a few weeks back. My dear friend Mike Roselle, who was subjected to Guantanamo-like conditions at the South Central Regional Jail for putting a mason jar of dust on the governor's porch.
Oh.
Meanwhile, some corporate high rollers and coal industry fat cats poison the water of 300,000 people, and we can't even get them busted for stream littering.
Mm-mm. So, where do we go from here? You know, I have this thing. You know, you and I both fight the good fight on different levels. I mean, I tip my hat, if I wore one, to you for everything that you're trying to do to bring awareness. Because like I said, last year when I drove through your neck of the woods, through your part of the country, my heart started breaking a little bit at a time. And every time I saw how beautiful it was there or is, the parts that aren't touched. And then I think about what you go through and what is going on in such a beautiful part. Well, it's going on all over this country. I mean, yes, I'm right now it's 66 degrees, okay, in January at almost, you know, 4:45 in the evening. It should not be this hot. We are having the worst drought that we've had in years, okay? So when you say this, and that's so, you know, everybody's like, well, why are you complaining? You're in L.A. It's gorgeous here. I said, yeah, but then we're about to burn down half the state. If somebody, you know, you heard about the fire where the idiots were setting you know, set the fire out here. And it took everything they had to, you know, to knock that fire out because we've had no rain. None. And you want to think, and just look at the economics of the situation, okay? I live in California, in Los Angeles. We have mountains here. But since there's been no rain, there's been no snow. So all those jobs that we can't, that can't be created because of, you know, the stuff that, you know, we can't, there's no the tourism and all this. I mean, I don't understand why, if you just get down to the brass tacks of the economics of a situation, I mean, throw out humanity, throw out, you know, caring about the, you know, the planet or what have you. What about the economics of whether or not if we don't take care of this world, there will be nothing left for you to make money from? I'm just saying. Am I being crazy?
No planet, no economy. No planet, no business.
No planet, no business.
No planet, no profit.
No planet, no profit. No rain, no snow. You know, no this, no that. No, you know, if the water is polluted, then nobody's gonna comes out wants to come out here and go surfing. If we're having, you know, oil spills or whatnot, and so, or sewage spills, because, you know, I mean, we are one of the most highly regulated states in the country. But we still have our screw-ups with our environment. And I thank God I live in California, you know, because, you know, when I hear about these states that are anti-women who wants to, you know, do ultrasounds, if I want to have an abortion, what? Who will make this so difficult for a woman to have an abortion that by the time she can get the abortion, it's too late? And then you still want to cut education. So tell me, Bob, about how much with the food stamps. Now, then how much do they cut from the food stamps?
Jesus. Let's see. The modest cut was in the Senate, and that was $5 billion.
Oh, $5 billion.
The wild-eyed maniacs in the House wanted to cut it up in the nearly $30 billion range.
And then what about the unemployment being cut too?
Yeah, sure. Forget it. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. So again,
sing a chorus of God Bless America and see if you can. Make tomato soup out of ketchup packages from McDonald's.
And but remember, if you don't buy something at McDonald's, you got to buy those ketchup packets, Bob. Don't forget.
Oh, I know. I know. That's what the 99-cent menu's for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the 99-cent menu for the 99%.
For the 99%. So you, as I sit and I watch the news and listen to the Koch brothers, and the only thing I could think of was them sitting there with the handlebar mustaches, twirling the mustache, the tips of their mustaches, or, you know, rubbing their hands together like Snidely Whiplash with Penelope, you know, you know, the perils of Pauline with the America, you know, the other 99% of us lying across the railroad track waiting for the locomotive to run us over.
Yeah.
You know, and then I see people still voting Republican. And people who, in your state, that the reddest of the red.
Oh, we're not the reddest red state.
No, you're not the reddest red state. I'm sorry, but you're still a red state.
I mean, see, that.
You're getting there.
No. See, Tracy, where West Virginia is concerned, red and blue don't work. And we're damn sure not purple.
No.
We have complete political dysfunction here, total political dysfunction,
because of coal.
Yeah, because we don't have Democrats and Republicans; we have Colocrats and Colicans.
Okay, because that's right. Because
they will both run a foot race through the blazing fires of hell to see who can appease the coal industry fastest and most.
That is so sick and sad.
I mean, my congressman is a man named Nick Joe Rahal, who has jumped out of a plane to prove how much he loves the coal industry.
Wow.
And he has been excoriated for being a liberal friend of Obama, and he's got a war on coal.
And then, again, this is what tickles me. Like you said about what you're listening to and what you choose to hear and what you choose to investigate. Because, you know, we're both old enough to remember that if it was on the news, it was true. If Walter Cronkite and just name any, you know, old school reporter, they're going, what the? They're looking at the whistleblowers, the people who brought that information to the public, and they're going, wait, this is not what reporters were supposed to do. They were supposed to expose the bullshit. They were supposed to expose the crap that's been going on, and so people could say, oh, no. I mean, could you imagine if the people who are in charge of the media, like Rupert Murdoch and the Kochs and all these fools, had the control of the media back during the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement? I shudder. I cringe to even think what would have happened had those people been in charge of the media back then. Do you care to even think about it?
Yeah.
And I just can't. I can't. But then again, you know, we have our outlet. We thank God for the internet, but then we have Verizon suing the FCC saying, you know, we should be able to control the content and how fast people can get information from the internet. Is that the beginning of the end for the internet?
And we don't know.
I mean, that is definitely cause for concern, is it not? Is that one brick out of the wall of our freedoms of expression, and you know, saying that we don't want this, is that the truth? This is what the truth is, and this is how we get it out. Do you really think we have a chance? I keep thinking we do. My question is, does anybody else do? Do you think we still have a chance?
With a whole bunch of those confounded caveats attached, Tracy.
Those damn caveats, they'll get you every time.
Yeah, well, you know.
Tell you.
It's a long way between caveat and caviar. But
well,
no,
you know,
I'm just in this weird place in my own head, in my own state, where I don't understand why there aren't 300,000 pissed off people surrounding the state capital of West Virginia demanding that the governor resign.
And that's where I'm wondering. What could they possibly?
I mean, I know I've probably gotten to the point where me talking about this water disaster bores people. But
no.
But the fact of the matter is, the governor of the state. I mean, okay, you listen to terrestrial radio once in a while, right? Or maybe you watch TV and you hear that nasty little noise come on that goes, this is a test of the, right?
Emergency broadcasting system, yes.
Yeah. They never even did one of those during this water disaster.
No warning, nothing to say, by the way, you shouldn't drink the water. Because
no, it just went out over the interweb tubes and. You know, there were people who were drinking this shit for days.
Now I have
just
to
sometimes
say,
water just stinks. But even Tracy, for the people who got the warning, they knew this fouling of the water was obvious enough that people were calling the Department of Environmental Protection before they even opened on Thursday morning. Okay? All right. This,
oh, you mean those science people?
No, those people whose job is to ignore, do their best to make sure that nobody makes life difficult for the chemical and coal industries.
Okay.
Okay, so you had people ringing the phone before they even opened on Thursday morning. You got other people saying, well, we've been smelling something awful for a couple of days. So we know that the spill was bad enough to be noticeable before opening of business on Thursday morning. When at about, I think, 11 o'clock, DEP officials got to the intersection of Westmoreland, Pennsylvania, and I forget what the other street is. The smell was overwhelming at 11.
A.M.?
Yeah, A.M. So we're now 3 hours in, at the very least.
Least.
At the most, we're maybe 2 days in. Okay? But we're 3 hours in, and they go to, and they finally figure out it's coming from Freedom Industries. Talk about words turning to ashes in your mouth just to say them.
Freedom Industries.
Yeah. So they get there, and the guy who was listed as president of the company, who really wasn't, said, no, we've just been moving a lot of product. I think everything's fine. Until a guy comes and whispers in his ear, and he goes, oh, wait, we got a problem.
Kind of like
And then they demand to see what's going on, the DEP guys do. And meanwhile, you know, if this was a movie, you'd have that ticking clock, you know?
Yeah.
And they finally get down there where the tank is. The containment wall's been breached. There's a 4-foot-wide stream of this toxic shit and a geyser of the damn stuff. It was described by one of the DEP guys as like an artesian well.
Oh, Jesus.
Spraying fountain-like up into the air and running into the Elk River. This is 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock goes by, noon goes by, 1 o'clock goes by, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then finally, what, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon? They issue an order. Well, first they said there's been a leak and we don't think it's any big deal and everybody's okay. And then by 4:30, 5 o'clock, they issue another one saying, don't drink the water. Don't drink it. Don't bathe in it. Don't wash your dishes with it. Don't stick your hands in it. Don't run it. The only thing you can use it for is putting out fire and flushing your toilet.
Unless you're anywhere near propane.
So we're talking about 10 hours or so of people all over that area served by that water company, who, I will remind people, remained clueless about the fact that there was a bunch of toxic chemicals sitting by the tens of thousands of hundreds of gallons a mile and a half upstream from their intake, because what could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
There's 10 hours of mamas bathing babies in this stuff. There's 10 hours of bottles of formula being made with this stuff. There's 10 hours of old folks in nursing homes getting sponge baths with this stuff. There's 10 hours of meals being cooked in schools for children with this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, in some cultures, a massive, I'm going to say a word now, little Timmy, little Cindy. Leave the room. Good.
Mm-hmm.
And 4, 3, 2, 1. There are cultures where when a political leader had fucked up this badly, he would have quietly gone into an inner room, sat down, gotten the ceremonial sword out, opened up his own guts and inspected his own entrails, and then hacked his own head off.
I don't see what the problem is. I don't see why he doesn't. And again, like you said,
and that's really, I guess that's just really, really hateful of me. But
it's not. You
know what?
But no, and no. What was no? You got me going, Tracy. You did it. You did
go,
it again.
Go.
No, the first thing. The first thing this rotten piece of shit can think of is to come out and say, "Well, this ain't about the coal industry."
Oh. Wow. That's all he could say. Is no indictments, no this, federal investigation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to get on. I'm thinking I'm governor. I'm going to get on the phone after we get people, but just somewhere along the way, I'm going to look at an aide or something and say, dial me up the head of the state police, would you? Governor, I got the head of the state police. Yeah, hey, Colonel, I don't care what you charge these fuckers with, but I want them behind bars before the sun sets. I don't want them running.
Everybody.
I want somebody in jail for this. Stream littering. Because I said that before. Because, see, stream littering really is a crime in this state. And if I can be thrown in jail, and you can be, for throwing a beer bottle in a creek, I'd say putting a few thousand gallons of toxic chemicals into the public drinking water supply ought to come under it.
But nobody goes to jail.
Yes, people go to jail. Lots of people go
but
to jail.
Not the right people. Not the right people, though.
Not their people. I mean, for God's sakes, these people had written him campaign contributions. You can't be putting your contributors in jail now, can you?
No, can't do that. No. Because their homies will remember that when it's time for the reelection campaign. And so, you put my homeboy in jail? What up with that? Oh, you get no, what is that, the soup Nazi? No soup for you? No campaign money for you. You get nothing. Nothing.
But for instance, we have had in this state, we have had peaceful, nonviolent activists who have been jailed on a charge of trespass under $100,000 bond or $20,000 bond. Okay? Criminal trespass in this state does not even include jail time. Therefore, as a matter of law, you can't be jailed for it. But they were damn sure jailed.
I just, like I said, now that I know you and people in other parts of the country, de facto or whatever, we may never meet, but you are a friend. I consider you my Horn family friend. So what happens in every state that I have family in happens, if it affects me, it happens to me. Like how you guys hadn't heard from me in a while, and then you heard about the shooting at LAX.
Yeah.
You guys know what I do for a living.
Right.
And I know there was a wave of concern. Is Tracy okay? And then what you guys probably heard that, TSA agent, there was that you guys could breathe a sigh of relief. But up until that point, you didn't know. And then again, you hadn't heard from me in a while. You're like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I got emails. I got text messages. Are you okay? I'm like, hey, yeah, I wasn't even at the airport that day. But it was concern. And there's where the problem lies. There's that small subset, and I know I have said this 100,000 times, about that small subset of people who have concern for people outside of them. It's one of those things that I have been trying to preach to my girl, because she grew up with, white privilege. And I tell her, you have to stop and be concerned about people other than you. Because she gets mad when I do, she's gotten better, but she gets upset when I do for others. I said, honey, for so long, I couldn't do shit for nobody else, barely could do anything for me, okay? But I am now in a position when I can't do for others. Because when I do for others, it blesses me, regardless of what that blessing may be, but it's still a blessing. So if I
can bless somebody with anything that I can do, I'm going to do it. Because I am just so grateful for where I am and how things of my life has changed in such a way. So, you know, why not? But when people are just selfish, out of just greedy, selfish, backbiting, just disgusting, like the Koch brothers and Karl Rove, and I don't want to share, and I don't like you because you don't look like me, because you don't think like me. People like that. I had a friend go off on me because somebody said something, you know, when Sarah Palin said the Pope was too liberal, and somebody posted on my Facebook page, if she thinks the Pope is too liberal, wait until she meets Jesus. And then I commented and said, what do you mean? Why do you think she's going to meet Jesus? And I had a friend go off on me. Well, that's, you know, you shouldn't say stuff like that. Of course, it was one of my white friends. And I said, no. See, this is where I'm entitled, because Sarah Palin does not like me. I'm black, I'm a woman, and I'm gay. Okay? She figures that I am beneath her for those, well, okay, I forgot she is a woman. But she thinks I am beneath her because of my sexuality and because of my color. I can only do my Christian charity so far, Bob. Even Jesus got pissed off. I'm sorry. You know, that turned out, even Martin Luther King got tired of the white people. He's like, you know what? I'm tired. Y'all ain't listening to me, you know? So, you know.
Well, I'll tell you this much, and this probably reeks of privilege in and of itself, Tracy. But I'm forever asking myself questions and using the interweb tubes to get myself something approaching an answer. And I got to thinking about that. It turns out it comes from a play by Sartre, but it was made known to the English-speaking world by Malcolm X. And that is the phrase, by any means necessary.
Uh-huh.
And it's a heavily freighted phrase.
Very heavily.
And I do not espouse violence. I reject violence.
But I do too.
But I think we can also understand that phrase to mean that doing stuff the way that other people have always done it is not necessarily right for a given time and a given circumstance.
Yeah.
For instance, having 300,000 people's water poisoned, maybe the best response is not singing Kumbaya.
No.
Maybe it's time to march. Maybe it's time to start going door to door and saying, listen, it's not going to get any better if you just wait for somebody else to solve this problem.
It's not. It is. And this is when you look at what's happening where you live. And you already have to deal with the coal thing, right? You have to deal with the, miscarriages and birth defects and all this other stuff on top of the fact of, you know, the lack of nutrition, the lack of the thing about your education and all these things that you're not getting, and that by right you should. And then you throw in this chemical spill in the water supply. And you gotta wonder, are people just so tired and so numb that they're just like, I can't do anymore. I cannot do this. I don't have the will. Or are people just so?
Well, no, they can't be tired and numb because they haven't done anything yet.
Right.
They're scared. Okay? They're scared. And they have been subjected to a mindset that says, this is how it is, and this is how it ever shall be.
And
most people do not have. Most people don't have the transgenerational memory that has been handed down in a lot of families to even remember that we were here before there was coal discovered. I mean, I found a cache of ancient photos the other day, a picture taken in 1965 of a log cabin that somebody, well, not even a log cabin, it was a shanty that people were still living in. And it was a farmhouse. And that was a house that was being lived in 1846. It was 120 years old being lived in when the photo was taken. And I do have that kind of knowledge, that kind of memory. I was looking up family history, and I saw where my grandmother, who had compiled it, and the writing is just fascinating because I knew her and I knew kind of a little bit how her mind worked. And there's this, you know, many Kincaids went into the coal mines when they were opened and died.
They never came out.
And so there's this idea that that's, you know, it is our heritage to be pissed on. It is our heritage to be blasted. It is our heritage to be poisoned and killed and have young women made widows and little children made fatherless orphans. That's our heritage. That's coal.
That's coal, baby.
A thousand people a year still dying of an absolutely preventable disease called black lung. And now we get and see this is the larger issue that I've been working on and trying to make the connection on, Tracy. 300,000 people lost their water for, well, they still lost their water. I mean, it's still not being properly examined.
So
I don't mean the water's not being tested. I mean the whole issue is not being taken in holistically, I guess is maybe what I'm trying to say. But you know, 300,000 people lost their water, but there are people who haven't had clean water in other West Virginia counties for years. Years. Where the water runs orange or stinks like death. Years. And it's not because they're peeing in the creek.
Or dropping a carton of Marlboro.
No, it's because these coal companies pump this stuff either down into mines or up behind a sludge dam where it leaches and leaks. I mean, look up Martin County disaster 2000.
Martin County?
Martin County, Kentucky disaster 2000. And you should get photographs of this coal wastewater running all over Martin County, Kentucky, because the mountainside blew out. Nobody died. Nobody died, but the thing is, as we've learned from mountaintop removal, you can be 5 years out, 10 years out, and then, hey, look, why do we have cancer clusters?
Right. Speaking of Kentucky, do you watch Justified?
No.
Two seasons ago, they had an arc about coal and mountaintop removal. Because, you know, each season they have a different storyline. And two seasons ago, it was about mountaintop removal and big coal and all that. And it's so funny because I didn't see that whole season because I was doing a lot of other things and stuff. So there's a lot of it that I missed, and I plan on, you know, catching up with it. Do you have Netflix or no?
Yeah.
Well, if you get a chance, I know you have so many other things that you're doing, but check out that season because I believe that season is on Netflix, but it's interesting of the people who, how they use, you know, their own folks to get coal, and, you know, they pick certain families that they knew. Okay. That they knew were, you know, would be very much pro-cult. And how they used, and those families used their influences, their influence in the community to convince other families to sell their land and whatnot and so forth to, you know, to the coal companies.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, I will look it up. I didn't realize that was out there. That's how people got dispossessed of land that they'd been on for already 100 years in some cases.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I didn't even, like I said, on those occasions that I would call and talk to you, didn't even, you know, it hadn't even dawned on me. And I don't even, actually, I think during that season, it was probably right before I started actually calling in on a regular basis. But at any, you know, in any, you know, point, definitely something you should check out because it's a great show. And I love shows like that when, you know, they talk about, you know, one of the big things that they're doing now is the drug trade coming in from Detroit into Kentucky. Heroin and oxy and what do they call it?
Hillbilly heroin. Oh my God.
Yeah.
When the folks in LA have learned that it's hillbilly heroin, well. Oh dear.
So oh dear. I mean, well, that's no difference than from the folks out there talking about the Crips. In the Bloods, you know. So, I mean, it's you know, part and parcel to something else, to the bigger problem of, you know, people being, you know, whole communities and being wiped out either by, you know, chemical disasters like where you are or coal or where I live, you know, the entire, you know, decimation of a whole family because of, you know, crack cocaine and whatnot. And, I mean, it's all part of the bigger problem. Is that, you know, the you know, and I'm far from a conspiracist, but when you hear and see how, you know, you got hillbilly heroin out there, but I have crack cocaine out here. But the bottom line is just a bunch of get rid of a bunch of, you know, Negroes and a bunch of hillbillies. They don't matter. You know what I'm saying? What so what? If, you know, mama's drunk, still strung out on crack, that she can't take care of the baby and she's using her food.
Well, yeah, because, see, she's not exercising personal responsibility.
No. But then again, we had that senator, was it a senator or a congressman that got arrested for buying cocaine?
Trey Raydell? Yeah, he resigned today, didn't he?
Yeah, he resigned. He stepped down, he, you know, because he got to go to rehab. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, hey, a couple of emails coming in. Dr. John agrees that he says 12 Years a Slave is an absolutely incredible movie. He says every white person should see this film and go home, shut the hell up, and just take out your soul and have a long moment of contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
And Diane, writing in from Kansas, Stan, in regard to my little story of going around and talking to the unsolicited conversations I had about global climate change. Diane pointed out, when you're out there, just tell them not to disparage your asparagus, since that apparently is right-wing code for back off.
I mean, well, it's like, you know.
Wait, one more, because Alan the trucker has one, and this may send you screaming into the night. Subject line, crazy talk at the dog park.
Oh, God.
I was told by someone at a dog park that the president's dog rides in a separate plane. I changed the subject because I did not know it, the subject. Later, I read that there was a right-wing email that went around which stated that the president flew the dog on a separate plane according to Muslim tradition or customs, which was proven to be a lie. On Snopes. Alan just says it never ends, the crap I hear while traveling.
Well, don't forget about the big upheaval that was about, you know, during the president's and the vacation to Hawaii. Well, and the first lady didn't come back with the family. Well, is she going to be using, are the taxpayers' dollars going to be used to bring her back to Washington? That was an actual question that Jay Carney had to field at during a press conference.
Yeah. Charming.
Nobody ever asked about, you know, did Barbara, you know, how Barbara Bush got around, or Laura Bush, or any of the other first ladies, you know, if she didn't, if she traveled separately from the president. It was never, you know, a question.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, anything they do, it's going to be uppity, right?
Yeah, how dare you? You know, you uppity Negroes, you.
And they are, you know, beginning. By the way, you know, of course, tomorrow night is State of the Union night.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to it. Because there's always a chance that I'm going to hear the words clean coal. And then I have to run screaming into the night. But the right wing is getting all kinds of work.
Oh, they're getting ready.
Yeah, I'm getting pitches already to talk about how, you know, Obama going to destroy democracy and blah blah blah, and how he's going to govern by executive order and, you know, dictatorship, tyranny, blue helmets of the UN.
And don't forget about that Obamacare. How dare we
won't
be able to go to. Yeah, that's going to be, from what I'm reading, on those rare occasions that I just get bored and think, you know, maybe I'll read the newspaper and read what the crazy right wing. But then again, I hear, you know, I see black Republicans talking bullshit, and then I go screaming into the night. But, you know, when I hear about how horrible Obamacare is, and again, how terrible, because, see, now my friends who are Republicans, we have now agreed to disagree and never talk about politics. Because, see, I have at the point that I'm old enough and black enough not to care about hurting white people's feelings anymore. I don't care. And when I hear my friends railing about, one of my friends going on and on about unions, because she, you know, she's in management at the hospital, at this hospital, and she was pissed off because the union sanctioned somebody or whatever. And she's like, well, you know, I'm just, union shouldn't be in healthcare. And you know me, being, because we're doing these conversations and text messages. And I said, well, you know, say what you may about unions, about being corrupt and all that. I said, but if it hadn't been for unions was some of the first great equalizers. Because it didn't matter if you were black, if you were a woman, if you were a man, what your job was, you got paid for equal pay for equal, you know, equal wages for equal work, period. And I said, because of unions, they've started a whole thing of blue collar middle class folks that should get paid a decent wage. And when people get mad, I said, tell me what's so wrong about being paid a decent wage. I get up and go to work every day. Why shouldn't I be able, I don't know, to keep a roof over my head, to make sure if my child gets sick, I don't go bankrupt? What is so terrible about that? Maybe I might be able to take my kids away for the weekend, or maybe, hell, save enough money so my child could go to college so they can do better than I did. I mean, like you said, Bob, our kids, your kids, Ferg and your daughters and all this, and my son, aren't our kids like the first generation since when that aren't going to be able to do better than their parents?
Right.
So tell me, what's so terrible about an organization that is going to make sure, I don't know, that you get a break after working, you know, a certain amount of hours, that you get a lunch, that children aren't, you know, that we don't have sweat shops, and we have child, you know. Why is it so terrible? Oh, I know, because people listen to, you know, I'm a fat fuck Rush Limbaugh, you know, and they're sitting around, and I'm going to say it, I know, and they're sitting around in the double wide with beer stains, and I know you said, don't talk about double wide, I want a double wide, but they're sitting around with four teeth between them, mad, because, and you know, not wanting to appear, not wanting health benefits.
Well, see, you weren't, I doubt if you were listening the other day when I talked about the the vehicle that I saw in the parking lot up to the Wiggling Pig. We got we got a Piggly Wiggly now. it used to be a food land. It's better grocery store now. It really is. In big letters on the back of his SUV, big white letters, OBAMA. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Each big letter spells out something else, and it turns out it's one big-ass mistake, America.
Wow. And I'm pretty sure he didn't think that up all by himself.
Yeah, I think he had help.
You know, it's just,
dude accosted me as I was, and it was, apparently I've just got talked to, I really, I don't have a Mary Kay bumper sticker on the back of the car or, you know, ask me about Herbal Life or even talk to me about global climate change. But still, with my loaf of bread and jar of peanut butter, I get, I guess we can forget about all that damn global warming. I mean, I've got a beard and everything, but Jesus. Yeah.
I give up.
Oh, by the way, Ron and Raleigh just pointed out the oil delivery guy where I work brought up Obama's $5 million vacation. Their megaphone is very effective. It's toxic, but effective. And Ron agrees. He tells me, you really need to check out Justified based on the novels by Elmore Leonard.
Yes. So with that said, I love you guys very much.
And you got a big well said, Tracy, well said from Jim. So
I love them, and I love you guys, and I'm out because I have a customer. But anyway, I miss you guys. I will keep better in touch. And you guys have a great evening. And Bob, keep fighting a good fight.
Going to try. Not much choice. Thanks, Tracy. You have a good night.
All right.
Bye now. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Tracy, the lady cab driver from Southern California. So 19 minutes past the hour on this, what has turned out a very busy Moran Monday. Yeah, I will. I'll check out Justified. I just got done watching the lone season of a 12-year-old science fiction series that, just got done watching the single season of Firefly. It was pretty damn good. But I apparently have a knack for finding shows that just can't make it with the general public or with network executives or whatever. So I'm going to put my dream of being a network television executive on hold because that's good TV. On the other hand, I never would have let I never would have let that thing with Simon Cowell on it get on the air. So, oops. And it goes almost without saying that here comes Honey Boo Boo Child and whatever show created it. Yeah, that either. Oh, well. Let's see here. Hey, Devin, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. Awesome. We talked and I wanted to make sure that we got this in for Moran Monday, because I mean, you can't get much more rantic than what we're about to talk about. I've read all the articles and they kind of make me again run screaming. Maybe we need to just change this, the name of the program to Run Screaming Into the Night with Bob Kincaid and the Horn Family. You're the one who put me onto it though. Get us started.
Okay. Well, I have the most recent article I've found on it from Truthout. Scientists speak out against Canada's war on science. You mind if I just read some of this?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
All right. Seven of Canada's most prized scientific libraries are being shut down, and some of their contents have already been burned, thrown away, or carted off by fossil fuel consultancy firms. This development is part of a Harper administration plan to slash more than $160 million in the coming years from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, or DFO, an agency charged with protecting the country's vast waterways. The Harper government has portrayed the move as necessary in order to reduce the country's deficit and provide Canadians with greater access to scientific information through the internet. But alongside the cuts, the Harper administration has doled out billions in subsidies, that's billions with a B, to fossil fuel dominated energy sector, $26 billion in 2011, according to recent International Monetary Fund report. As for accessing the information at the shuttered libraries, an internal DFO document labeled secret obtained by Post Media News in late December, along with the scientists who utilize the research facilities, tell a different story. The once secret DFO document speaks of culling materials in the libraries, a term that critics believe to be far more devastating than it sounds. Much like the original meaning, the killing of animals with undesired genetic traits, they see the budget cuts as a way to do away with undesirable science. The Harper government is not simply influenced by the fossil fuel industry, it is the fossil fuel industry, said Brad Hornick, a lead organizer with the Vancouver Eco-Socialist Group.
So just to kind of not put too fine a point on it, the Canadian government is destroying its own knowledge base.
Correct.
Irreplaceable, ancient,
absolutely
irreplaceable, precious books. And no, just because you're putting them on the internet doesn't mean nobody needs the hard copy anymore.
Oh, but it gets worse.
Well, okay, tell me.
Those documents that they're supposed to scan, they're not scanning them. They're just going straight out the door into the, you know, the dump truck and off to the landfill.
You mean the ones they don't burn?
Correct. Or the ones that, you know, the consultants don't, you know, raid for their offices. And, you know, there are a few people who found out about it and, you know, went out and, you know, dug through the dumpsters and tried to save what they could. But, you know, it's nothing compared to what has happened. Just to give you an idea about some of the stuff that's come up missing, there was an original copy of the 50-volume log set. Now, it wasn't the, you know, the logs that were on the ship, but the
Shackleford expedition?
Well, it's, hang on a second, it's Challenger.
Challenger, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah. Just to give you an idea, Challenger expedition was in 1872 to 1876, and they went all over the world. is something like 70,000 nautical miles. And, you know, they found all kinds of species, you know, just all kinds of research on the, on this vessel, even research in the Arctic. You know, it was very impressive, and it was a very difficult, you know, at that time to be at sea for that long. You know, there were quite a few deaths.
Yeah, 1872 to 1876.
Yep.
Mike, the mad biologist, says the expedition laid the foundations for modern oceanography and marine biology. He says this would be like destroying the logs of the HMS Beagle. He also says an irreplaceable 50-volume collection of logs from HMS Challenger's 19th-century expedition went to the landfill, taking with them the crucial observations of marine life, fish stocks, and fisheries of the age. The destruction of these publicly owned collections was undertaken in haste. No records were kept of what was thrown away and what was sold and what was simply lost. And then this. Some of the books were burned.
Yes.
And again, as I think I mentioned on Friday night, this dovetails with the story that Dr. John brought us a while back of the elimination of National Park System archaeologists in Canada, and all of this out of this on account of the hobgoblin of the deficit, and it is that it's a hobgoblin. Okay, it's not real. You know, Dick Cheney famously told us deficits don't matter. And, let's see, the legendary environmental research resources of the St. Andrews Biological Station in St. Andrews, New Brunswick, are gone. The Freshwater Institute Library in Winnipeg and the Northwest Atlantic Fisheries Center in St. John's, Newfoundland, gone. Both collections were world class. And you got to, I mean, and we've got Canadian friends in the Horn family commune, and how many people in Canada even knew this was going on? And why
not
wasn't
very many?
Why wasn't there? You know, well, if not many, and that's probably the way the Harper government prefers it, that not many people know. But
they were supposed to scan it, so, you know.
Right, but it turns out, according to Mike the Mad Biologist, no, it didn't happen. Because that scanning that's expensive too, right?
Oh, yeah, and it takes a lot of time to scan a book. I mean, you know, even professionally, you have to, take it out of its binding and then scan all those pages, and you have to, you know, work over the file and, you know, make sure everything's searchable. And, you know, it's a massive undertaking.
When you first sent this along to me, Devin, I was just, I don't know, book burning just really gets under my skin. And even just taking it off to the landfill.
Yeah.
Whatever, this idea that there is some portion of the acquired knowledge of us as a species that in 2014 we figure we can just do without, that's like a sign of people who don't want to go on being a civilization anymore. If the knowledge is of no importance, and the only thing important anymore is just making sure that the rest of Alberta gets turned into a giant tar sands sump so that we can mix that stuff up with some highly volatile chemicals and send it God knows where. Well, why not?
Yeah. Well, it's worse than that, because, you know, some of the information that they've thrown out could turn out to be something that would have been necessary for us to continue living on this planet.
Right.
I mean, it's literally that bad. And, well, I mean, you know, you read my first coherent thoughts on the matter, and you know, I don't know if you want to share those, you're welcome to do so, but that was the first thing I could do.
It's interesting. Asa just wrote in from Vancouver, and he said, "I don't think people south of the 49th parallel, meaning us, realize how evil this son of a bitch Harper really is." And I have to agree, because this is pretty damned evil. Because this has this comes with an ulterior motive. The reason you want to get rid of this stuff is, if you get rid of this stuff, then you can't look back at it and find out that, you know, really, really devastating changes are happening to the climate, the environment, the ecology, and the human beings who are north of the 49th parallel. I mean, there's almost a direct one-to-one correlation. You know, Tracy was talking a little bit about how, you know, how the hillbillies lost their land. Well, the repository of a public of the ownership of land is in the deed books of the courthouse, right? Well, guess what happened when the coal industry started really getting its legs under it? Suddenly, courthouses burned up. What do you mean you own this land? Show me your deed. Well, it's at the courthouse. Courthouse burnt. Get out. Ain't your land. This is that, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, if you had resources that showed, for instance, that the fisheries outside, maybe out on the Grand Bank or whatever, that was just teeming with fish, and now it's not, then the data for making that observation is just gone, isn't it?
Yep. It's irreplaceable. There's no other way to put it.
Kate writing
just plain
from Montana.
Irreplaceable.
Under the subject line, total blackout, Kate writing from Montana says, "The Harper thugs are equal to the Bush regime. This story's been all over CBC for several weeks. Lots of folks are up in arms, all for naught. If the documents are gone, they're gone. Harper's evil oil incarnate, as are his conservatives. The story is tied into climate change and the resource extraction industry. First people genocide. Lots of folks know about this. The population all seem to be frozen by inertia, just like we are down south." And then Kate just says, "I'm so glad I'm old."
Yeah. Well, with all due respect, I think he's worse than Bush. I mean, you know, Bush didn't, you know, back up the coal trucks to the Library of Congress and, you know, just offload everything. I mean, you know, he may have stopped research from being done or suppressed research that had been done, but this is a whole new a whole nother level.
Yeah, this is the future. And again, what Kate points out, that nobody's marching in the streets. Nobody marches in the streets when they burn books. First of all, books aren't.
Well, other than the people burning them.
Yeah. First of all, people aren't that, and this is just sad, and it's real. People aren't that interested in books anymore. When we came into this house, it was full of books that had been collected over a lifetime by my grandmother. And it's still full of books that we've added to the collection here. Another generation or two, that won't happen. And that's not me passing some sort of judgment on my children or my future progeny, grandchildren, great grandchildren. It's just, well.
Well, another couple of generations, and those books very well may not exist anymore. You know, once they go digital, then they can be disappeared.
Or
you know, if everything's
access,
in a cloud,
access can be restricted.
Yeah. You know, it just, you know, if it's just in the cloud and, you know, say one spot, you know, it can just go poof one day, you know. I mean, they're, if they're able to spy on you through angry birds, then.
Oh, did that just make you, I was fit to be tied over that. The NSA,
yeah.
We thought it was silly when they were spying on World of Warcraft. Now they're spying on Angry Birds.
Yeah.
I guess my
insane.
Evening respite with Jetpack Joyride is next.
Well, I just, I resent you the email with my initial response to this, mess I found. You can read it if you want to. I'm not going to read it or repeat it because I think you could do a better job of it if you want to.
Moran doesn't cover it. They destroyed an original irreplaceable 50-volume collection of logs from HMS Challenger's 19th century expedition. Many men died for this data, and the rest suffered unfathomable hardship. Orwell rolls in his grave at least 60 hertz. Just add magnets and coils, and he'll generate gigawatts. Nazism, of another name, now thrives alongside fascism across North America. The die is cast. History shall repeat itself now. Welcome to Europe, circa the 1930s. We, North America, will be the great evil of this era, not Europe. I'd hoped that we would not have to endure this rerun of horror, but after this, I dare not. Burning books shall be only the beginning. The fourth turning is upon us. Keep a weather eye for the other horsemen as they are near. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the best I could muster at the time.
Well, I just think... I just think that the people who are willing to do this are people who are not much interested in having anything resembling civilization continue.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're better at it than people were in the 1930s. Just as during the bad old days of the suppression of labor, they just moved in with the thugs, with the saps and the billy clubs and the machine guns and killed people out of hand. Well, they got better at it. And now people are happily, they happily still wear the chains. But the chains, have a little bit of a velvet lining to them, and they fit much more comfortably.
Well, yeah, it's, the iPhone, it's a prison, but it's a very nice prison, you know. It's got loads of apps and, I mean, that's just the reality of it, We put, not only do we... have the chains on, but we put the chains on and we like it. That's the terrible thing about it, but I don't know, if anybody out there has read The Fourth Turning. I haven't read the whole thing, but I'm working on it. There are four different in a cycle, there are four different generation archetypes, and we've reached the point where you get the people like you were talking about who don't care about anything, and that's the point where you get total war, just like what happened the Depression and then World War II. When you get people like this in power and in majority, it gets really ugly for a while. And then, once it's over, if there's anybody left, then they, straighten things up and the cycle starts again. And it takes, you know, a cycle takes about 80 or 100 years. You know, basically at the point where the last people to remember the last crisis are dead or, you know, no longer considered of any interest or worth.
That's absolutely a valid point, Devin, because I made the argument a long time ago that you really didn't hear the Republicans coming out with a full-throated assault on Social Security until after most of the generation who had first been saved by poverty or saved from poverty by Social Security were dead.
Yeah. You know, the people who remember, like the woman that started AARP, you know, she started that after she saw a retired school teacher living in a chicken coop. You know, this was, you know, before Social Security.
Yeah. No, there's a report out there we were talking about. Sandra brought it to my attention, I think it was a couple of years back, about life in the United States prior to Social Security. And it was hateful. It was absolutely brutal. But I'm glad we did get time in for this conversation, Devin. It needed to be had, because this is it's not a good sign, and I wonder when the people of Canada are going to wise up about
it ought to get worse before it gets better.
Unfortunately, you know, you may indeed be right.
It's always darkest before the dawn, you know.
It's not quite dark yet. Right. It's always darkest before it gets darker, too.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess is a Yogi Berra way of looking at it. But, yeah. Well, Devin, have yourself a good evening, and we will talk soon.
All right. Thanks for covering it.
Since Kate says there's a bunch of stuff out there, I'm going to go and try to read more. But, you know, Jesus, a 50-volume ship's log. Yeah, who could possibly use that? Damn.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, I guess I just use it like the, you know, the old Monkey Ward's catalog. You know, you just put it in the outhouse, I guess.
I don't know. You know, old Trekkie that I am, Captain's log, off to the dumpster today. Okay.
Yeah. Well, hey, that reminds me of something. Were you talking about the TV shows? Star Trek was an abject failure when it was on the air.
It got three seasons to fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor little Firefly got 13. It got 13 episodes.
I mean, it took a generation before Star Trek even really hit a big. So,
yeah,
just something to think about.
But they really did. Did you watch Firefly?
I didn't watch it when it was out. I didn't even know it existed.
I didn't either. You know how I first learned of its existence was when Michael, otherwise known as Kid A, showed up with I think it was last year. He posted a picture of himself on Facebook wearing his Firefly Jane hat. It's a knit cap, and
yeah,
Michael's a pretty good barometer, and so I started looking around, you know, what is it, and then I noticed it was out there for viewing on Amazon, and started watching, and I was absolutely captivated, because it's this neat melange between the high tech future 500 years from now and the arguable reality that on colonized planets, you're going to have a lot of really low-tech stuff going on. So it's kind of a mixture between a Western and a science fiction piece.
And then, of course, there's that sort of Confederate aspect of it, too.
Well, yeah, there is. Because
minus the racism, of course, but, you know.
Yeah, these are people who lost a civil war and fled to the fringes of civilized space.
Yep.
And I guess the guy who played the lead, Mal, claims descent from Confederate General Jubal Early, even though he was raised in Alberta.
I don't
know.
All I know about him is, he's playing Castle now, but, you know.
Yeah.
But that's all I know about
it
that.
It was a fun one. Well, Devin, have yourself a good evening.
All right.
All right. Bye now.
All right. Well, good luck.
All right. Bye. Our buddy Devin calling from elsewhere here in Wild Wonderful. Almost level, that is, West Virginia. Hey, good news. Thank you to Karen, and thank you to Asa. They both joined in with Sal, and we are now halfway to tonight's fundraising goal. Thanks to Karen, Gary, and August. It is much appreciated. Thank you, Asa, and thank you, Sal. So between now and 12 minutes from now, or maybe now and the beginning of things tomorrow night, we've got about $75 to go, and it is all much appreciated. It's how we keep all of this going. A few more things just to wind out the evening, all this talk of Canada. It seems... Well, you can't hardly talk about Canada anymore without talking about the god-awful stuff that's rolling around on trains and pipelines hither and thither around that nation and this nation. The latest, of course, being... the pipeline that blew up this weekend. The pipeline, of course, owned by responsible corporate citizen TransCanada. Sub-zero temperatures, of course. Really sub-zero temperatures. And left people without fuel for heat. Might be able to get some gnat sound out of this. Let's see. Yeah, hold on. What's it sound like when a TransCanada pipeline goes up? Not nice. According to the CBC and according to Paul Rawlick, we could see these massive 200 to 300 meter high flames just shooting out of the ground, and it literally sounded like a jet plane. Yeah, gas supplies were shut off for as many as 4,000 people in Manitoba. TransCanada said they had the fire put out by Saturday afternoon. Took them about 12 hours. About as long as it took anybody to warn people there was poison in the water here in West Virginia. How about that? They're trucking in compressed natural gas to help people warm their homes in the interim with primary support being given to personal care homes, hospitals, schools, and churches being used as emergency warming centers. You know, tomorrow is the State of the Union. Is it too much to hope? And if I'm asking, is it too much to hope? I think the best guess is that it probably is. But is it too much to hope that maybe Barack Obama would say here, listen, it's January 2014. I've just decided, screw it. No northern leg of the Trans-Canada pipeline. Just no. Yeah, that's not going to happen, is it? But it would be nice. It would be nice. And one last more, and before we round out an evening chock-a-block full of them. This Moran's name is Marion Deckers. He's the chief executive officer of Bayer. I might remember it was Bayer Crop Sciences who almost killed the entire Kanawha Valley a few years back when we almost turned into Bhopal. Oh, well, never mind. This story has something to do with a cancer drug called Nexavar. You already seen this? Martin Deckers gave an interview to Bloomberg Businessweek. Nexavar is used to treat late-stage kidney and liver cancer. I've come to expect CEOs of corporations to behave like non-human monsters. But this is getting pretty well up there. Martin Deckers of Bayer is pissed off because an Indian court in India, arguably the same judicial system that ruled that it's illegal to be homosexual, but let's put that to one side for a moment. This is the Indian Patent Court. They gave a license to a local Indian company to reproduce Nexavar because it was, for all intents and purposes, rendered impossible for people who get cancer in India to access because it's $69,000 for a full year of treatment in India. For anyone who's interested in comparisons, $69,000 is 41 times the annual per capita income in that country. Apparently, the drug is effective. So because it was economically inaccessible to people in India, the India Patent Court gave a company the right to just make it and, you know, to hell with Bayer. Enter Bayer CEO Marion Deckers, who, in giving his interview, said, "We did not develop this medicine for Indians. We developed it for Western patients who can afford it." Now, he didn't say we developed it for Western patients. He said we developed it for Western patients who can afford it. That means there's a whole lot of Western patients in the United States who get to pound sand. The Indian company producing the drug is able to produce it at a 97% discount. It's $177. Kind of makes you wonder what all goes into that $69,000 a year, doesn't it? I'll bet you some portion of it goes into Marion Decker's salary. Maybe, you think? Let them eat cancer. We did not develop this medicine for Indians. We developed it for Western patients who can afford it. Welcome to the free market. You know, this guy's a moron, but at least we could maybe point out the fact that at least he was honest about his capitalism. His capitalism doesn't worry about, no, it doesn't. It's all about the money. It's always all about the money. So there we are. We find ourselves at the close of this evening's program. This from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, the Trans-Pacific Partnership will solve that little problem when they sue the Indian government. I think there's something in the works already. So thanks to all of you, especially this evening. Thanks to Sal and to Asa and to Karen. Karen, Gary, and August, thank you. It's how we stay afloat here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you. To Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time in this ongoing conversation. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org. ACHECT.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.